If I were to tell you that we were going to talk about 10% this morning, and isn't it amazing how the magnitude of a figure depends entirely upon your, upon the circumstances. For example, 10% unemployment, such as our nation is experiencing right now, is viewed as a terribly, terribly big number. Literally, what that means is 10% of the workforce normally that would be employed in our nation today have lost their jobs. Now, there are a lot of people who believe that the Lord expects us, as He expected the Jews in the Old Testament, to give 10%, the tithe, when the contribution or when the collection plate is passed around. I personally don't think that's nearly enough, but a lot of people do believe that 10% is what the Lord expects them to give, and as they see that collection plate coming from down at the other end of the pew, that 10% just becomes such a big thing that they can almost not make themselves lay the check in the collection plate, because 10% of my income, why, that's a terribly big amount. And yet, 10%, in so many ways of looking at it, is really a small number. In order to pass, when I was in school, you had to make a grade and maintain a grade of at least 66%. I understand that that's higher now in most schools. But if I ever brought home a paper at which I had received a mark of 10 or 10%, 10 out of 100, well, suffice it to say, I wouldn't be here today. Somebody else would be preaching this sermon. It just depends upon the circumstances and what you're talking about. But if we were to say that 1 out of 10 turned back to give Jesus thanks for healing them of leprosy, that 10% becomes a mighty small number. 1 out of 10. In that text that Butch read to us just a few minutes ago, Luke chapter 17, the full story is recorded in verses 11 through 19. And this occasion took place while Jesus was on His way to Jerusalem. And it happened there between Samaria and Galilee, probably near the border of those two places. And it was as He was coming into the outskirts of a little village that those 10 men who had been afflicted with the awful disease of leprosy saw Him and cried out to Him, "Jesus, Master, have mercy on us." Now, in order to better understand the setting of this situation, let's understand what God's law for the Jews said about things like this. You know, God's law contained requirements that had to do with and addressed certain matters of cleanliness and disease, and leprosy was one of the diseases that was specifically identified. God had specifically spelled it out and had given rules that were to be followed by those who were stricken with the disease of leprosy. In Leviticus chapter 13, verses 45 and 46, we read, "The leprous person who has this disease shall wear torn clothing, and he shall let the hair of his head hang loose, and he shall cover his upper lip, and he shall cry out, 'Unclean, unclean.' He shall remain unclean as long as he has the disease. He is unclean. He shall live alone. His dwelling shall be outside the camp." If you look up the word leprosy in a good Bible dictionary, you'll find an explanation of it that might go something like this one from the Parsons Bible Dictionary. He says, and I quote, "The disease begins with specks on the eyelids and on the palms, gradually spreading over the body, bleaching the hair white, crusting the affected parts with white scales and causing terrible sores and swellings. From the skin, the disease eats inward to the bones, rotting the whole body piecemeal. In Christ's day, no leper could live in a walled town, though he might live in an open village. But wherever he was required to have his outer garment rent or torn as a sign of deep grief. He was required to go bareheaded and to cover his beard with his mantle as if in lamentation at his own virtual death. He had further to warn passers-by to keep away from him by calling, 'Unclean, unclean,' nor could he speak to anyone or receive or return a salutation, since in the East this involves an embrace." End of quote. And so these 10 men who meet Jesus along the way, because of their physical illness, were outcasts of the society of that day. They were not allowed to associate in any way with normal, healthy people. Lepers were banished to die, bit by bit. These fellows are tremendously blessed to be able to have an encounter on this occasion with Jesus. And Jesus healed them. And one of the 10 came back to say, "Thank you." This morning, I'd like for us to take a look at what that one man saw. And the point of our study is that I hope that we can see what that leper saw that day. Number one, let me suggest to you that this man saw the reality of his affliction. The Bible says there in verse 13 that we read just a minute ago that when they saw Jesus, they lifted up their voices saying, "Jesus, Master, have mercy on us." It would be fair to say that all 10 of these men recognized the gravity of their affliction. You could not live as a leper in Palestine without having a full understanding of how bad your situation is. Now, there may have been times in all of our lives that we have experienced terrible things. And it is a rare occasion when something terrible comes upon us that we don't even realize that it's there. Most of the time, we are acutely aware of our problems. Sometimes, because of our problems, we seem to think that we have the right or the privilege of not having to be normal, not having to take care of certain responsibilities, but that really isn't true, is it? No matter what your problems may be, there are certain things that cannot be laid aside. These men, though they suffered from the affliction of leprosy, knew full well who Jesus was. They were aware of what Jesus could do for them. There are an amazing amount of parallels between leprosy and sin. The common affliction that has all men in the throes of spiritual death today is the affliction of sin. We would do well to recognize the reality of the affliction of sin. In Romans chapter 3, beginning in verse 10, Paul quotes several passages from the Old Testament. In fact, this passage was used last Sunday morning in our sermon. He says, "As it is written, there is none righteous, no, not one. There is none that understandeth. There is none that seeketh after God. They have all turned aside. They are together become unprofitable. There is none that does good, no, not so much as one." Now, you might think in reading that Paul's talking about a pretty terrible bunch of folks. Wonder who it is that he's seen gathered together in some kind of group, and he comments on their pitiable situation. And then we come down to verse 23 of Romans chapter 3, where Paul says, "For all have sinned and come short of the glory of God." And we realize that Paul's talking about us. He's talking about all of humanity. He's talking about every single person who lives to reach an age of responsibility, but who has not yet submitted himself or herself to the will of Christ. All are guilty. None is righteous. No, not one. The disease of leprosy and the affliction of sin have so much in common. Both of them are progressive. They start out rather small, but they gradually spread to the point of taking over. Both of them are terribly destructive. One destroys the physical body. The other destroys both body and soul in hell. Both are terminal if they are allowed to continue. This man saw the reality of his affliction, and he was willing to do anything that he could to have this affliction remedied. Number two, let me suggest to you that after Jesus cleansed this man, he realized, he saw that he was greatly blessed. No doubt, every one of the ten realized what a wonderful change had come over their bodies. And there is no doubt that every last one of them were very, very excited. Almost as it were like a little child who gets a toy that he or she has longed for a long time, or maybe has seen and it's held their fancy, and finally he is given that toy, and so in all of the excitement, he doesn't really even understand what it took to get that toy, and often in his joy and excitement forgets to say thank you to the one that gave it to him. But you know, there's a significant difference between excitement and a realization of how great a blessing has been bestowed upon us. This grateful Samaritan leper was excited, no doubt. But his excitement gave way to significant appreciation for what he'd been given. He had gone in an instant from walking dead to once again living normally. Again, you and I have been cured if we've obeyed the gospel of Jesus Christ. We've been cured from a disease that's far greater than leprosy. As I said a minute ago, leprosy afflicts the body, but sin afflicts the body and the soul. Leprosy cuts a man off from society, but sin cuts us off from God. Isaiah 59, verses 1 and 2. Leprosy would eventually lead to physical death, which actually would be a relief to an afflicted body. But sin leads to spiritual death, which results in condemnation for eternity in hell. This man recognized that he had been given something that very few in his condition would ever receive. He saw what a blessing he had. Have we even begun to realize what a privilege it is to be counted among God's people? To have been among those that were taught the truth of the gospel of Jesus Christ. To no longer be among that number of people who don't know that there's anything wrong and certainly don't know what needs to be done. We have learned the truth. And we've been blessed with the opportunity to obey it. Outside the walls of this church building, there is a world that is dying in sin. May we recognize the significance of our blessing. May we be impressed with the need to share it with those around us. Number three, I want you to notice the fact that this man saw and recognized Jesus as being the source of his great blessing. That's pretty obvious, isn't it, from what he did? He fell down at Jesus' feet, giving him thanks. He didn't say, "Wow, I'm clean. What happened?" No. He knew exactly what had happened. He didn't say, "Man, I've been taking those pills for months now. I'm glad they finally began to work." No, that's not what he said. He recognized that it was not he himself. It was Jesus. Well, you say, of course, he should have recognized Jesus as the provider of his blessing. And I suppose that's true. In actuality, that shouldn't have been a difficult stretch. That could have been the only logical conclusion, even in that day. It was Jesus. It was Jesus whom he asked for mercy. It was Jesus who had healed him. It was Jesus before whom he fell down, giving thanks. What about us? Have we seen as clearly the logical, simple fact that God has poured into our lives immeasurable blessings? Do we see the fact that God has given us things that we otherwise could never have had? Do we recognize Him as the source of those things that we need the most? Sometimes I'm afraid we prefer to see ourselves as somewhat self-made, as though we've accomplished everything on our own. You've heard, I'm sure, of Lance Armstrong, the phenomenal bicyclist, I guess is the proper term. I wouldn't say biker, but that wouldn't be right. He's won the Tour de France, the greatest bicycle race in all of the world, 7 times. And the experts say that his record probably won't ever be equaled. He's overcome cancer. He's overcome great adversity and been able to accomplish such a thing that has put him in the world renown. Let me read to you a little piece out of an article that appeared on the internet in August of 2005. Quote, "One of the most recognizable athletes in the world today is Lance Armstrong, winner of an unprecedented and unlikely to be matched, 7 Tour de Frances and survivor of cancer. Lance Armstrong is a powerful example of what a human being can do when they dedicate themselves to a cause. Moreover, he is an example that it can all be done without religion." and without gods. Lance Armstrong is not ashamed of the fact that he does not believe in God, that he certainly doesn't attribute his accomplishments to any kind of blessing or any kind of benefit that he might have received from God. He is a picture of self-reliance. He speaks on occasions and urges young people to become more and more self-reliant, to work hard. Nothing shameful about hard work. Nothing shameful about refusing to depend on others, as some today need to learn to do. But he teaches a lesson that ignores God. Now, with that illustration fresh in your mind, I want you to think back, and this won't be hard, especially for some of you Alabama fans. You remember last year, the BCS champion, or earlier this year, I guess it was, the championship game between Alabama and Texas. Remember the greatest fear that Alabama fans had? Colt McCoy, that quarterback for Texas. The young man who didn't seem like anybody could stop him until he was tackled on that first drive that Texas made in that game and injured his shoulder on his throwing arm side. And he stood on the sidelines then and watched Alabama beat Texas and win the national championship. Colt McCoy, who is a member of the Lord's Church, had already gained for himself a reputation of being very spiritually minded, and who in every public interview always gave God glory for the ability that he had and the blessings that God had put into his life that made it possible for him to be where he was. The day after that heartbreaking game for his team, he was interviewed. And the summary that was written of that article, that interview, the next day said this at its opening: Colt McCoy is a young man who never refuses to give God glory, even at times of the greatest disappointments in his life. Now, I'm not a huge football fan. Doesn't really matter to me in the long run who wins and who loses. But when a young man who already has that kind of reputation then is featured in an article, and the first thing they say about him is the fact that in the face of one of the greatest disappointments in his life, he still thanked God for the opportunity and for the talents that he had. And then I find out that he's a Christian. And I think back to those like Lance Armstrong, for example, who claim to have made it all on their own. And then I'm reminded how badly we need to see Jesus as the source of our blessing. In fact, James says in chapter 1, verse 17 of that little book near the end of the New Testament that bears his name, every good gift and every perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation nor shadow of change. Number four, this man saw the need to express his gratitude. I want you to look at this picture of thankfulness. Verses 15 and 16, then one of them, when he saw that he was healed, turned back, praising God with a loud voice, and fell on his face at Jesus' feet, giving him thanks. Now, he was a Samaritan. This fellow stopped and went back to thank Jesus before he continued to do anything else. Can you imagine the flood of things that came into this man's mind, all of those things that now he needed to do, that he wanted to do, the things that he hadn't been able to do ever since he'd had leprosy. Go find his wife. Go find his parents. Go find his children. Go find his friends. Go back to his house for the first time in all of that time that he'd had leprosy. Start experiencing normal life again. But no, those things would have to wait. First, he went back and fell down before Jesus, thanking him. Look at the passion in his gratitude. He did more than just turn around and wave, "Hey, I appreciate that." No. He went running back to Jesus and fell on his feet and poured out an emotional thanks. Do we see the need to express our gratitude in a real way? Are we too busy? Are we too preoccupied with the things that we want to get done? Maybe, just maybe, you're going through some tough times right now. Maybe you've been pretty distracted here lately. Maybe you're spending the majority of your time just trying to figure out how to keep things from crashing in on you. Maybe it's due to illness. Maybe the economy. Could be any number of things. Remember, every good gift and every perfect gift is from above. Thanking God should be a priority in my life, especially right now. Especially in adversity. Every day in my prayers, I should be drawing nearer to Him in thankfulness. I should feel drawn to assemblies just like this, where we can pour out the gratitude that should be filling our hearts. And I need to be passive. No, not passive. That's how we are. I need to be passionate with my gratitude. When we sing songs like "A Wonderful Savior," or "When My Love to Christ Grows Weak," or "Count Your Many Blessings," I shouldn't be sitting there just mumbling through the words. We need to see what the leper saw. We need to see the need to thank God for what we have, for what He has done. At the end of that story, Jesus raised that very valid question. Were not 10 cleansed? Where are the 9? Was no one found to return to give God glory except this foreigner? Verses 17 and 18. Brother Burton Kaufman, in his commentary on the book of Luke, gives this very interesting list of 9 possible answers or excuses that could have been offered by those men who did not see fit to come back and give thanks to Jesus? Number one, well, I was waiting to see if the cure was real. Number two, I was waiting to see if it would last or if it was just temporary. Number three, I felt sure I'd see Jesus later and I could thank him then. Number four, you know, I don't think I really had leprosy. Number five, well, I think I probably would have gotten well anyway. Number six, I was going to give glory to the priest. Number seven, well, you know, Jesus really didn't do anything. He never touched me. Number eight, well, actually, any rabbi could have done the same thing. Number nine, well, you know, I have been getting a lot better lately. And you know, we can learn a lot from those nine fellows, can't we? Number one, we can learn that they were too distracted to be grateful. And we don't ever need to be too distracted, by good or bad, to be grateful. And number two, the fact that they did not thank Jesus bothered him very much. It's obvious from the text. The worst expression of ingratitude is to continue to live in sin when you know what the truth is, when you know what you need to do, when you know the price that has been paid for your salvation, and yet you continue in sin. There is no greater expression of ingratitude. What is the excuse that we will use? Do you need to come to Jesus? Have you never obeyed the gospel? Or have you already become a child of God but have become unfaithful? We're going to sing this song that's been announced to encourage you. And if you need to respond to the Master's invitation, we hope you'll do so as we stand together and sing it.